journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Shavua Tov, Shavua Tov to one and all. This is 101.9 High FM. This is Mystical Text, and I am Adel Kazilski, your host, for the next 40 minutes. And as I was waiting to be given the go-ahead to come online, I was thinking, well, this is the first of an entire series of Divrei Torah and people that come and teach Torah between 1 and 3 on High FM. And it would be remiss of me, particularly with what we are learning, not to mention the events of this weekend. You know, there are many, many times that when I will engage with people who are yet to express their belief, and I'm choosing my words carefully, because every Jew is a believer. And every Jew does know there is a God and that God is looking after us. Just sometimes we want to go blame the rest of the world or not have the correct amount of bitachon and the correct amount of trust and express it as such. We will express it in different ways and maybe look at the world and try to understand the world from the way we perceive it and understand it. Or we try to weave stories around circumstance and blame the world. The bottom line is there is a creator in this world, a creator that has chosen the Jewish people, has looked after the Jewish people from the day that he chose Abraham to be our forefather to this very day. And there have been enormously numerous times, multiple times in history, where we have seen the hand of God in an incredibly revealed way. And Saturday night was just one of them. You know, when Motzei Shabbos arrived and I switched on my phones, I actually have guests from the land of Israel, from Jerusalem, staying with me. They've come to spend Pesach with us. They already notified me that in Israel they were starting to shut down schools and gatherings and beaches and whatnot. And as everybody knows, what transpired was a very, very nervous night ahead. And when we look back now at the aftermath and we see the incredible, incredible miracles that happened to the Jewish nation on Motzei Shabbat and Sunday, when an evil, despot regime, the likes of the Nazis, the likes of the Spanish Inquisition, the likes of Nebuchadnezzar, the likes of Pharaoh, the likes of Haman, and they come out and blatantly go out with a wanton desire to exterminate the Jewish people. There can be times, and we just lived through it now, where we tremble in our boots and we think, well, how are we going to ever survive an onslaught? Motzei Shabbos was supposed to be a Holocaust. If you go back now on media and you're honest with yourself, go look. 30% of that which was supposed to be sent to Israel actually failed to be sent because it failed at launch or it landed up in places that it wasn't supposed to be. Go look at the destruction and the devastation that each one of those drones, those ballistic missiles, those cruise missiles did to other places. Some of them were actually in Western Iran. Three, I think, fell back on one city. I can't remember. If God forbid, even one of them had landed and really done its job, we would have had a massive devastation. If 300 of them all had done their job, there would be no Jewish people. And so while, yes, we show immense gratitude to the Israeli Air Force, to the Home Command, to the Army, to whoever it is, the people that manufactured the Iron Dome, the people that worked out how the sling works, all of those things, understand that this was only because of God's protection and God's proving to us that he and only he is the one that can provide this incredible miracle, an incredible miracle. To have the greatest missile attack in world history. We made world history on Saturday night, and not one person, not one Jewish person or their property was destroyed, is a miracle as tantamount to the miracles I'm going to take you through now. When we left Egypt, when we were in Egypt, when we left Egypt, and the many, many other miracles that we have seen in our lifetime. And it is incumbent on us to publicly, openly recognize and thank Hashem for this incredible, incredible miracle that we all just went through. I was thinking to myself, you know, it doesn't make sense that the Jews were sitting in Egypt. They were under the most harshest conditions, okay, unbearable slavery. And God comes and he brings along 10 plagues. And by the time we come to the ninth plague, the plague of darkness, 4/5 of the Jewish people die on that night. Why? Because they did not believe that it was God that was causing these miracles. And that is an unbelievable thing to think about. You're sitting in the harshest of miracles. You start seeing crazy things happen, like the blood turning to water, like a plague of frogs, lice, pestilence, hail, you name it, it came. Locusts, you name it, it came. And by the time it came almost to the end of the of this exile, 4/5 of the Jewish nation did not believe that it was God that was doing it, was only finding excuses of why it could naturally occur, that, okay, we're in such and such a period and such a thing can happen. You know, the locusts come every 17 years, go National Geographic. Let us not make the same mistake today. We are seeing miracles upon miracles upon miracles. Because Saturday night is so fresh in our minds, do not allow us to just be complacent and think that it's just the IAF, the Israeli Air Force, or the Home Command, or the military the military guys, okay, that actually made this miracle happen. Let's juxtapose this. Why did we get slaughtered on October 7th? If we are so brilliant in our technology, we are so brilliant in our military advances, we are so brilliant at providing security to the Jewish nation, how was it possible that people could just cross over a wall, which most people in their minds thought impenetrable? That had the highest level of communications and alarms and security that there is in this world. Nevertheless, that wall was broken down and 1,200 people were brutally massacred. Why? There's only one answer, folks. When Hashem guards us, he guards us. When Hashem wills it that we get, unfortunately, an attack like we did on October 7th, even the greatest minds in the military, even the best Mossad guys, even the best of everything else will be rendered useless. So publicly, we give hoda'ah, we give thanks and shevach and praise to the Lord that does not sleep, nor does he slumber, and that he saved his entire people from annihilation on Motzei Shabbat. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This is Adel Kozulski. This is 101.9 Chai FM. I'd love to know how you felt on Motzei Shabbat on Saturday night when you opened up your phones, and how you felt the next day when we saw the incredible miracles that happened to the Jewish people. And as many people quoted, V'hisha amda labotenu velano, and this is what has stood us and our ancestors, that in every generation they want to kill us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu mi'adam, that Hashem saves us from their hand. Love to know your thoughts. 34519 is our SMS line, and 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number. Let's get stuck in with learning Torah, because Torah protects, and Torah is the arsenal, as well as, by the way, Tehillim. Tehillim, 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 which, by the way, just as a side note, Tehillim sounds the same as Tillim. Tehillim, Tillim. You can hear that I'm adding a hey to the word Tehillim. Tehillim, we obviously are referring to the book of Psalms. Tillim, without the A, are missiles. The way we counteract the missiles is, yes, we allow our Air Force and Home Command to do what it is that they have to do. But the way that we actually fight the war is by saying a lot of Tehillim. There's many Tehillim groups going around. It's very good to say morning, noon, and night, and everything in between. It was actually quite incredible that as the missile attack was starting, I myself joined a group. There were many, many people. In a matter of hours, there was close to 800-900 people, and the Tehillim was rolling. And certainly, unquestionably, that assisted in the incredible miracles that we saw. Now we're going to go back in time, because, you know, when you look at history, you learn lessons, and then you can apply them to what you're doing today. So we're in chapter 14, we're in verse 3. We're at a strategic point now where, again, God has maneuvered the world around to allow Pharaoh to think that, in fact, the Jews have become scaredy cats. They were halfway on their way back to Egypt. They're stuck in a valley. They have got they've got mountains on either side. They have a sea, and behind them is Egypt. And this is now going to give Paro the impression that, in fact, it's time for an attack. This is God speaking to Moshe and just telling him, don't make it, don't see it as it is, as we are saying today. Don't make it as it is, like you just think you're reading it and seeing it on the news channels. Know that there is a divine plan. What is a divine plan? But Amar Paro, Paro will say, Livnei Yisrael. He will say that the Jews, Nevuchim hem ba'aretz agar alechem hamidbar, that they lost in the area and the desert will shut them in. So he's making the Jews take a backtrack to give Paro the opportunity to have the reality that, oh, the Jews are stuck. They're going to get in trouble. And remember, the Jews stopped in front of this huge idol called the Baal Tzafon. This Lord of the North was placed in the south. I don't know why it's called the Lord of the North and placed in the south of Egypt. But it was there because they wanted any slave that escaped to be scared that they had this humongous idol overlooking there that would bring a lot of trouble. That's why it was there. There was a few other reasons, which I will get into shortly. But let's continue verse 4 of chapter 14. Ve'hizakti et lev Paro, I will harden Paro's heart. Ve'radav acharehem, he's going to pursue them. Ve'hi'ichabdan b'faro v'chol cheloi, and I will bring glory upon myself through Paro and through all his soldiers. Ve'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. And then the whole of Egypt will know, and this will be the final blow, that I am Hashem v'yasuchein. And so the Israelites did that. Okay, they listened to God's command. They made a U-turn. They put themselves in a precarious position. They stuck themselves in the narrow peninsula, and they were waiting. They were waiting to see what was going to happen. Now, verse 5 talks about people who come and tell Paro that they have fled. Now, I want to give the backstory before we read verse 5 so that you can understand the context. What happened was that when the Jews left Egypt, they were escorted out. In fact, Pharaoh went and told governors and ministers and big hoo-has and whoever they are to go out and accompany the Jews into the desert so they could pray to their gods. And they did, and they left with a lot of royal accompaniment, if I might say that. When the third day came, what happened was, when the end of the third day came, and obviously the Jews had absolutely no desire whatsoever to return back to Egypt, a confrontation happened between the Egyptians that had escorted the Jews out and the Jews themselves. Now, there were three types of people. There were the Israelites that had left Egypt. There were the Egyptians that had joined the Israelites because they figured they better bank on the winning horse. So they defected to the Jewish people. They were known as the Arab Rub. Then we had this whole royal accompaniment of the who's who and what's what in society who had taken them out and were escorting. It was those people that, you know, went and said, okay, chaps, it's over. You've done your time now. It's time to go back. And they said, no, we're not going back. We're never going back. And they had an entire argument. It erupted into a bit of a civil war. And these royal people took up arms. They fought against the Israelites. The Israelites overpowered them. Many of them were killed. A few of them managed to escape. And these are the people that run back to Paray. And this is what verse 5 is going to tell us now. Ve'yugad le'melech Mitzrayim. And it was told to the king of Egypt, right? The yugad is in the passive to say that who went and told them? It was, in fact, these people that had escaped. What did they come and tell him? Ki barach ha'am. That, in fact, the Jewish people, the Israelites, had fled. They had no interest in coming back. And so what did that happen? Paroi and his officials changed their minds regarding the people. They went, oh, so now they've taken us for a ride. They said one thing and they're doing another. Okay, and they said, Mazot asinu, so what did we do? Kishilachnu et Israel me'ovdeinu, we've allowed Israel our forced labor to be let out. And they then realized that they had taken away all the slaves that were doing all the work that was being done for the last 210 years. They had no workforce left. So this is where you see the hardening of Paro's heart. And so just again, just to give a timeline, it was a Thursday, the first day of Pesach, where we left Egypt. We came to Ramses. Friday, the second day, we left Ramses and arrived in Sukkot. We stayed there over Shabbat. On Sunday, we left Sukkot. We came to Eitan, and then we were going to continue. And now you're going to go and see that this is where now the Jews seemingly are in a very precarious position because they're locked in. They've had a civil war with the Egyptians. A bunch of them have gone to tittletale, and now Paro's changed his mind, and he's going to wreak revenge. Now, very, very interestingly, I said to you that they parked themselves in front of the Baal Tzafon, right, the Lord of the North. Now, there were quite a few magical glyphs there that were known to the Egyptian hieroglyphists. The idols were made of copper. They were inscribed with many names of many occult forces, which the Egyptians could summon. And they believed that if they could use those esoteric powers, the Egyptian sorcerers would be able to know everything that was happening all around the world. Now, through the priests of the Baal Tzafon, Paro was told that God had decreed to Abraham and his descendants that they would have to be in Egypt for 400 years. And in fact, only 210 years had passed by. So Paroi, in his calculations of fully go and attack them, and understand this guy is coming out from a devastation. Egypt was decimated. It was completely ravished. It never, ever came right again, even to this very day. But it was completely, completely devastated. You know, you've burnt your hands 10 times with this God of Israel. You have the chutzpah now, just a couple of days later, to go and attack again. And the answer is yes, because he was using sorcery. And his sorcerer said, listen, they were supposed to be there for 400 years. It's only been 200 years. And this, by the way, how do we know this? This is not just a story. Look back at the verse. It says, the Yugad Lamelech Mitzrayim, it was told to the king of Egypt, Ki Barach Ha'am, that the nation had fled. But if you look at the gematria of Barach, Bet is 2, Resh is 200, Chet is 8, that comes to 210, right? So since the numeric value of Barach is 210, those were the actual physical years that the Israelites were born in Egypt. We know we counted 400 years from the time of the birth of Yitzchak, right? That's really when the exile started, because that is when everything started unraveling, the whole story of Yaakov and Yosef and then the brothers and then the famine. This was all part of the exile of Egypt. The physical exile was 210 years. So it was time for our redemption. They had misread it, and they thought that there had to be 400 years of actual physical exile. And so they went and said to Paroi, you know, according to our sorcery, we still got a good 190 years ahead of us. And that's what caused Paroi to change his mind, to go and say, yes, I got decimated. Yes, you know, the God of Israel was very strong, but they've made a huge mistake, the Israelites. They were only supposed to go for 3 days. And if they're doing that, then he felt empowered that he had a chance now to destroy the Jews. The second was that they were now in a very strategic place to attack. Which enemy doesn't want to attack their enemy when there's nowhere to go but to push forward? They're sealed on all sides, and they just allow them to run into the sea and drown themselves. That was the plan. Also, what made Paroi even madder, if he wasn't mad already, was that he was angry at the Erev Rav, those Egyptians that had joined the Jews in the desert, that had taken the side of the Jews. Why? Because here you've got Egyptians, okay? And they have now seemingly adopted the Jewish faith, okay? They were also not coming back to Egypt, okay? And this is what, if you go read the verse again, it's saying, who got upset? Whoops, I didn't turn the one page here. Who got upset? The Yehafech Levav Paro v'Avadav. It was Paro and his officials that changed their mind. Because they said, what have we done? How could we have allowed the mixed multitude, the whole bunch of Egyptians that wanted to go with permission to leave, okay? Now we've lost our forced labor, and now we've lost a lot of our population after all the decimation and all the population that had already died. So he was quite crazy, okay, that in fact he had done really a lot of harm, and this, he was going to go down in a bang. He wasn't going to let go now. He had to do something to keep face with the Egyptian army, okay? And so all of these things come back. And let me just put it in perspective before I carry on. Let's put it in perspective that who was Paro? Paro was the leader of the entire civilized world, okay? When Paro realized that the Jews had left Egypt and half of a lot of his population, and there was nothing left, he could not work out, okay? He could not work out who's going to come to him and pay tribute to him. How's he going to, like, fund the country? Who's going to give him all the taxes that he needs? In fact, everybody's going to look at him, and he is going to be the laughing stock. You know, there's a mashal given about a man who sold some wood for a low price, not thinking it was anything unusual. And the buyer takes his wood, he puts it and makes it into fine furniture, and he fetches a premium price. and seeing the huge profit margin, the initial seller says, "Oi to me, I had this wood in my possession and I sold it. I sold it for almost nothing." So Paroi is like that seller, right? As long as the Jews were in Egypt, they worked with clay bricks all day. They were constantly covered with mud. He didn't realize their true value. Now they had left, he began to realize that he actually had a great nation in his midst. And he goes, "Oy vey, I didn't know what a good thing I had. When they were here, I didn't recognize their value." And the Egyptians also realized, okay, that they had nothing. They looked around at Egypt. They saw nothing. It's kind of like almost like the village doctor leaves the village. And then everybody goes, "Oy vey, now that the doctor's there, who's going to look after us?" And that's why a lot of them defected, or those that survived. They defected, okay? So now we've got this like perfect storm that has built up in an absolutely enormous way. And this now gives Paroi the incentive that he has no option but to try and save face for himself, for his people, for the whole civilized world, for everybody that is looking at the superpower. He needs to do something. And so he decides devastatingly to attack the Jewish people.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Okay, let's continue now and let's just see what it is that he brings. Chapter 14, verse 6 and 7, by Yesor et Rechboi, ve'et amor lakachimo. So Pharaoh, in his hot-headedness, he harnesses his chariot and he takes his people with him. By Yikach shesh me'ot rechev bachur, v'chol rechev Mitzrayim, v'shalishim al kuloi. He takes 600 chariots with chosen crews, the entire chariot corps of Egypt with officers all over him. Understand, this is the next day. It's now the fifth day of Pesach. He has a meeting. He has a war cabinet meeting. Exactly what's happening now, people. With his generals, his sorcerers, his astrologers, his elders, his government ministers, they're all planning a plan against the Israelites. Okay? Same thing's happening today. There are governments and war cabinets discussing things. And as we say in our psukim, Utso Eitza Vetufa Dabru Daber Velo Yakum Ki Imanu Kel. They can sit and they can counsel, they can debate and they can plan. We don't care. We have Hashem. We have a God. And he will come through with us as he did with Moshe Shabbos. So back to Egypt time, they decide the time has come for us to attack. Says Paroi, "I will not be like all other kings who will remain behind the lines and merely give orders. I will be in front." And how does he incentivize his officers? Imagine you've got a beleaguered army that has just seen the entire devastation of Egypt. Nothing left. Why should they be motivated now to go against these people and their God again? He says to them, "This time, I promise I will divide the spoils equally for you all. I will not take any more than any of my men." And in fact, as an incentive, the Midrash tells us, Paroi said to them, "I will even open my own treasuries of gold, of silver, of precious stones, and I'll give you all gifts before you go to battle." That's how he gets his chariot corps to come together. And he took the best of his chariot crew, and interestingly, he made sure that every one of them was circumcised. Now, why? Remember, back in the day when Joseph was the viceroy and he was collecting riches for the Jews, for the Egyptians, for Paroi, eventually they had nothing left to pay. They had used everything. And then what he did was he just wanted to get them to be connected somehow to God. So he asked them to be circumcised. Circumcision is a very, very deep mystical mitzvah, and it is a mitzvah that allows one to circumcise their heart, so to speak, in that they're opened to godliness. So he made sure that his chariot corps, the guys that were coming with him, were circumcised so that they feared God and they understood that this was, so to speak, the right thing to do. Now, you also had to get horses. Remember, most of the animals were killed during the plague of wild beasts, etc. There were certain of them, and it happened to be this chariot corps that feared God. They were scared of the God of Israel, and they had put the animals in barns before the plague of hail. So they had survived. So these, so to speak, righteous Egyptians now came and were brought their horses. Now, generally, it's customary to have two horses pull each war chariot and have another two horses behind to serve as replacements. The Midrash tells us over here that Paro put three horses to pull each chariot because, heck, he wanted a lot of horsepower. He wanted to get there as soon as he could. And just also another very interesting thing is the words Veshalishem al Kulo, which I translated as with officers over them all, but Shalishem is the same Shorish as the word Shalosh, three. And the Midrash gives us different connotations as to what this threefold meant. Some say that that the entire chariot corps of the Jews numbered 3 to 1. So if there were 600,000 Israelite Jews, okay, then, and really truthfully, the number from before, they didn't know how many Jews had died in the plague of darkness. There actually were 3 million 4/5 had died. That means he was coming with something ridiculous like 9 million troops. Whatever it was, he came with three times the amount of power. Also, they wanted to go and tell them that let me just say this before I tell you the next thing, that there were 3 Egyptians for every Israelite. Some said there were 30 Egyptians for Israelites. Some said there were 300. The other thing is, and very, very interestingly, and here is something that we can apply to today, that paralleling each of Pharaoh's troops, God sent an angel of destruction to protect the Israelites. And why am I telling you this? Because in the book of Yechezkel, Ezekiel, and Ezekiel is the Navi, is the prophet that actually talks about the end of days, which, by the way, folks, if you haven't noticed, we are in. Now, the end of days is the war of Armageddon, which, if you haven't noticed, folks, we are pretty close in, around, and about it. It talks about the fact that Ezekiel prophesies, and he says, "These shall Paro see, and he shall be consoled for all his masses, Paro, whose entire army was destroyed by the sword." So the rabbis ask, what is it that he saw and that he was consoled, that eventually he would be happy that it was just his troops and him that drowned in the sea? So the rabbis go and explain that when a person experiences personal tragedy, okay, he sees no he has no comfort from somebody who is experiencing a lesser tragedy. If, God forbid, you are fighting a terminal disease, you don't want to hear about the person who can't get her shopping bags right at Pick and Pay. Like, okay, like my sorrows is much bigger than yours. But when one sees someone else who experiences an even greater tragedy than his own troubles, seen in them. Hashem says to tells the Yechezkel that Paroi God had a vision of what is going to happen at Gog and Magog, which we're talking about now, folks. Watch the news. Okay? What is going to happen with our enemies at the end of days now, with Armageddon, is Paroi's downfall was child's play. Paroi was consoled that it was only him and his troops that got drowned in the sea. When he sees what is going to happen now to Gog, the king of Magog, with the greatest armies in the world coming against the Jews, and they're going to be destroyed, he's going to be like the person complaining about the shopping bags at Pick and Pay. So the bottom line is that Paroi started heading for the Jews. He was pretty vicious, ready to take them out. We know what's going to happen. He's going to be completely destroyed. But folks, listen from history. In every generation, they have arisen against us, but we have the God of Israel that is looking after us. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We're going to do one more verse before we sign off for today, and that is going to be verse 8. Vayechezak Hashem et lev Paro, melech Mitzrayim. God hardened the heart of Paro, king of Egypt. The yird of acharei b'nei Israel, and so he chases after the children of Israel. B'nei Israel yoytzim b'yad rama. The Jews were leaving in triumph. The Jews understood, and they recognized the hand of God, and they marched out with their heads held high. Okay, and even though they knew, and they did get scared. We're going to see they did get scared, but we're going to see the what God tells them to do. That God was behind them, and we will be triumphant. Since this is the last broadcast until after the holiday of Pesach, I'm leaving you listeners with the following message. We are living in absolutely historic times. We are reliving an exodus of Egypt. We are reliving the downfall of Haman. We are reliving history again in modern times in 2024. Number one, open your eyes and witness the miracles and say thank you to Hashem, that he enabled our soldiers and the people that running Eretz Yisrael right now to have the hatzlacha, the success that they had. Yes, we should show gratitude to the fighters and everybody else, but it was Hashem's will. Thank you, Hashem. And most importantly, stay posted, because I think we're in for miraculous times. Wishing everybody a chag kasher v'sameach. May we only witness open miracles. May we leave the final exile, and welcome the most wanted, desirable redemption, not only for ourselves, but for the entire world, Jew and Gentile, for all those who know that there is a God of Israel. May we all be redeemed from all our troubles, and may we live very soon in peace, in harmony, in love, in Yerushalayim this year. Have a wonderful week and a wonderful hug. This is 101.9 Chai FM.